We're getting very close to the passage, do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. I know you've been waiting for this. Some of you have been looking ahead, and it's coming up in Hebrews 10:25. That's the verse that's been used all the time to tell you that you should be in church. Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together. And Martin Zunder hasn't been to church in 35 years. So he has forsaken the assembling of himself together with himself. I don't know. Anyway, that passage has been misconstrued, twisted like a licorice stick, and bent out of shape like a pretzel. But I'm going to explain it to you probably Monday. It's not going to happen until Monday. Hello, everyone. Once again, this is Martin Zunder, and we are just barreling through Hebrews chapter 10 at a snail's pace. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but it's not. Actually, it is. But if I say it's not, then it might not be. All right, now I'm in Hebrews chapter 10, and we left off around verse 8. So, you know, I think I left off at verse 8. You know, I get on so many sidetracks, but people tell me, Martin, we love your sidetracks. Like the Lost Ten Tribes of Israel and that talk I did on addictions and the Deus of Christ. I'm getting mail from people. Martin, we love it. Keep getting on your sidetracks because that's the good stuff. And what, you don't like Hebrews? What do you mean it's the good stuff? No, that's okay. I understand. It's the same thing at conferences. I've been told that, you know, we're up there following our notes, and then we just, like, get off on a tangent, on a tear, and we start going off on an unrelated topic, and people say they love that stuff. I guess it's the getting off the script, and people like impromptu. Like Mark Twain said, it takes me a good hour to write a really good impromptu speech. But it just so happens that everything here is impromptu. I have a general idea of what I'm going to be doing, but there's no script, so I'm taking it as I come. I do look at it ahead of time, see what's coming up, and I formulate thoughts. And I have thoughts here in verse 8 of Hebrews chapter 10. Further up, when saying that sacrifice and approach present and ascent approaches, and those concerning sin, thou dost not will, neither dost thou delight in them. Again, God didn't like the slain animals, but it was a temporary thing, an expedient to take us to the true sacrifice. These animals, these sacrifices which are being offered according to law, then he has declared, verse 9, lo, I am arriving to do thy will, O God. We saw that most poignantly in the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but thine be done. He, God, is dispatching the first, that is getting rid of it, that he should be establishing the second. And there, in verse 9, is the whole crux of Hebrews. He's getting rid of the first, that he should be establishing the second. First the soulish, afterwards that which is spiritual. The elements come first, the rudiments, then the truth, then the reality. But some people are not yet dispatching the first. They're still retaining it, but you have to discard it. And the fact that it's so hard for people to do that is evidenced by this recurring theme over and over again. First and second. The first priesthood, the new priesthood, the first covenant, the second covenant, the blood of animals, the blood of Jesus Christ. And everything is contrasted. The first is contrasted with the second. And for us, it's the first Adam, the last Adam. For us, it's the old creation and the new creation. We still have old and new. We still have first and second. This is a recurrent theme in the scriptures, first and second. And you will ask yourself this question, because I have asked this of myself. If the second is so darn great, why doesn't God start with the second? If the new covenant is so wonderful, why start with the old covenant? Just start with the new covenant. If the second Adam is all that, then why not start with him? Why drag us through the first Adam? Why go through law if you're going to introduce grace? Why have the evangel of the uncircumcision, or should I say, if the evangel of the uncircumcision is so great, and it is, why have the evangel of the circumcision? All right? You're getting it, I think. Even as I'm talking, you're getting it for yourself, because you people are smart and you've learned some things over these months and years. It's contrast. And you'll see it over and over and over again. God is setting up contrast, and it's the only way you're going to rejoice in the fact that you don't have to shorten your penis like you had to in the old days, because this is the gospel of the uncircumcision. Notice the common root word in circumcision, uncircumcision. It's circumcision. We had to have this ritual, this rite that you had to do in order to appreciate the deliverance from not having to do it. But it first had to be seen that there is can be no confidence in flesh. And as I told you, with circumcision, it was supposed to be a humiliating rite. Oh, I've been circumcised. But instead, Israel bragged about it. I'm circumcised, you're not. Well, they got it all wrong. Thus, with New Covenant, Old Covenant, Old Covenant, New Covenant, Old Priesthood, New Priesthood. And so, but it's such a hard transition. But I really envy people who come into the second first. You know, Paul just brushes over this. He brushes over Israel's history in Romans. He talks about it in Galatians. Really, you can't find one letter of Paul's where he does away with all things Israel, because Israel was the before picture. The before picture of salvation, the before picture of grace, the before picture of freedom. And we now have come into the after picture. This is what all those things spoke of. And we tend to be complacent because we have not walked through. It's a two-edged sword. We become complacent because we have not walked through the first. Right? We just were born in an era where all these seconds are here. New priesthood, new man, new humanity, new covenant. So we take it for granted. You know, like the post-World War II generation, these kids have everything. The Gen Xers or the Millennium people, whatever you call them, they have everything. They don't know about the sacrifice. They don't know that this is a privileged era. And so they're spoiled. So that's why Paul has to bring up the old, to give you perspective of what you have. Again, you can tell somebody that we have access with confidence to the Father. Oh, you know, yawn in Ephesians, yawn. But until you understand, and Paul brings up Israel's history, that there was a time in Israel when they didn't have that, and all these animals had to be slain by the day, and the priests had to gear up, dress up, put their breastplate on, and walk in their silk breeches, or was it linen? Yeah, linen. They couldn't sweat, and go into the holy place with fear and trembling. And the only reason we can appreciate what we have is because of that. Lo, he is dispatching the first, Hebrews 10:9, that he should be establishing the second. Establishing it. The second has come to stay. It's staying. The first was transient, as evidenced, I'm reviewing here, by the fact that the high priest kept dying. They kept dying. There was a routine. There was a succession of high priests, one after the other, until the ultimate high priest came, that he should be establishing the second. The establishment comes with a second because that's what he's working for. Eon 5 lasts the longest because that's what he's working for. All these other eons were preliminary eons. We're living in a preliminary eon, honey. And I know that here's a case where some people are going to be born, I think, I'm not sure. Let me think about this. All right, let me think about this. All the generations of the eons of the eons. Okay, I think some people are going to be born in Eon 5. Can you imagine? You're born in Eon 5, the greatest eon ever. The reason I'm saying this is because there's a verse, God be blessed for all the generations of the eon of the eons, amen. The eon, singular, of the eons, plural. That indicates the last eon of all the eons, Eon 5, in which there's no death. Can you imagine somebody being born then? I would tend to think they'd be spoiled. They're walking around in the New Jerusalem where there's no need for the sun or the moon, and there are these elders there. And we're going to be able to say, we remember when there was a sun and a moon. And they're going to say, what? And they're going to show pictures of the sun and the moon. And they're going to talk about a time when people died. And when there wasn't a tree of life. There wasn't leaves on the trees for the healing of the nations. And these young whippersnappers are going to be talking to these elders. And they're going to go, tell us more stories about Eon 3. Because there's going to be people there who experienced Eon 3. Namely us. I mean, we're not going to be living on the new earth. But we will be able to visit the new earth. We will be the elders. We will be intensely famous celebrities when we come to the new earth. And people are going to say, these have come away from a time when death reigned, and we saw it, and we are privileged to have come through. You know how a World War II veteran now, like, this guy's awesome. Can you imagine talking to somebody? There's not very many of these folks left who lived through D-Day. I saw an episode of To Tell the Truth, or no, What's My Line? No, To Tell a Secret. No, What's My Secret? I forget which show, but it was an old show. It was from 1956, and on the panel was Bill Cullen and Kitty Carlisle and other people. He was on the panel. Who was the host? I can't remember the guy's name, but anyway, What's My Line? No, To Tell a Secret. This guy was on here, was 94 years old in 1956, and he had a secret. And the panelists were supposed to guess his secret. So the guy came on, and he whispered the secret to whatever his name was, the host. And his secret was that he witnessed John Wilkes Booth kill Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, this guy was at Ford's Theater on April 14th, 1865. I mean, that was epic in 1956. This guy was, again, 94 or 96 years old. So can you imagine somebody today who was alive? Let's just say there was somebody today who was at Ford's Theater. This guy was 5 years old when it happened. So, I mean, that's just epicness. Now imagine the fame of that person. Now imagine our fame of having lived through an eon of death. We're saying we don't appreciate it. So the second... To live in the straddle two eons, and that's what we're about to do, folks. We're about to straddle two eons. And not only this, not only is the eon about to change, we're about to graduate from eon 3 to eon 4, but it's more epic than that. You are so well positioned in history that you're not going to believe it, because we're not only going from one eon to another, and not many people can say that. I mean, it's one thing. I mean, I lived through the millennium, and so did all of you. We went from 1999 to 2000. That was kind of a big deal. But you're about to straddle two eons. Not only that, but we're graduating into the good eons from the evil eons. So it's not only a change of eons from eon 3 to eon 4. It's a change from the evil eons, eons 1, 2, and 3, to the good eons, eons 4 and 5. So this is a huge juncture in the Aeonian calendar, on the Aeonian calendar, in Aeonian history, and you are going to be witness to it. So you're living in a elite generation. You are privileged to about to make this one small step for humanity, one giant leap for humankind. And I'm telling you, Neil Armstrong on the moon is nothing compared to what we're coming into. I got all that from verse 9. He's dispatching the first, that he should be establishing the second. And I've run out of time. I was supposed to get at least down to verse 11, but I didn't do it. Still, are we not making our way through Hebrews? Yes, we are making our way through Hebrews. It has been verified. We are getting through Hebrews. Look, we started in chapter 1. I don't know when. We're in chapter 10. There are only three chapters left, and then on to the book of Revelation. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad I'm here. It's a miracle that I'm here. It truly is. And by the grace of God, I'll be back with you tomorrow.